Chapviz number 11, 10th of December 2012. The Autumn Statement.
Sponsored by the Stackyard Nursery, where you can have your gardens and interiors designed by Karen. Or just come and pick up a tree. We deliver too. Stackyard Nursery address is www.stackyard-nursery.co.uk, or come and see us in Old Station Road, Mendlesham, in Suffolk, IP14 5RS.
Hello and welcome to Chatbiz. My name's Karen Saunders, and with me today I have Chris Sewell, who is chairman of Suffolk FSB, and Peter Martin, who is treasurer of Suffolk FSB. Both also hold regional positions with the FSB. Peter is a forensic accountant and has, with myself, gone through the autumn statement, or as a lot of people are calling it, the mini budget. George Osborne announced quite a few changes. I will say I was a little bit perturbed and a wee bit confused where they were coming from with regards to the actual financial debt we're in, how we work it out, and it depends on which figures you're taking. Once again, there seems to be a bit of a fudging around the edges with the figures to find out what our true deficit is. But on top of that, there was some good news for small businesses. George Osborne announced £5.5 billion capital package and support for long-term private investment, including in new roads, science infrastructure and free schools and free academies. What's your view on that, Peter?
Well, anything that actually involves doing something, as in building roads, building infrastructure for the actual community itself, actually employs people. People are employed, therefore they can buy in the shops, and actually helps come out of the recession. In its own way, it also supports growth for the future, because these are all things designed to make us stronger in the future. And we've all seen what the A14's like, if you especially travel between Cambridge and Huntingdon, anywhere near peak hour, there should have been extra lanes on there years and years ago. When it comes to the education side, we are behind some of the other countries in the world with regard to the way in which we actually technically train our pupils. Therefore, their skill set is growing, and that's going to give us a commercial disadvantage in the future. So spending money on education is well worthwhile.
One of the big things, Chris, that you and I have talked about before is local procurement, because they have stated that they are going to take the advice from Mr. Heseltine, which is about the localism bill and how local procurement must be followed to build up and develop local areas. His review is, Lord Heseltine's is, review of the economic growth. No stone unturned is what it's actually been called, and it was released in October 2012. I will put a link up on the website for anybody who wants to find it and read. It is quite detailed, but he is stating that we have to go forward for local procurement.
Now, it's all very well saying that they should go forward to local procurement. We know from the research that we've done that procurement isn't a straightforward matter, and you at least need a county and preferably a regional approach to procurement. Then everybody knows the rules. They can't actually say that they haven't got a model for procurement, because the Concordat has been out for, what, 6 years? And we do know that authorities that have followed that are achieving quite big savings. 12.5% off expenditure for a unitary authority is pretty good.
That's high.
And we've got records of that, and we can evidence it. We also know that where LEPs have concentrated on that, they've started to have success in that particular area. I believe the Leicestershire LEP has been one of the LEPs that has looked at procurement and has driven it forward. At the moment, we don't have a local approach that is agreed by all the districts, the borough, the county, preferably the other counties and boroughs across the border, approach to procurement. No. I don't know why. It seems to be a no-brainer. It saves money when they're going to have cuts. It helps generate income within an area that has, what, 53% of employment in the small business sector?
Yes.
95% in the SME sector outside the public sector? It's a no-brainer, but for some reason, localism has not grasped that in this area. And if it hasn't grasped it, what's going to make it grasp it? Are the government going to wag a finger, and is that going to be enough?
It's 5.5 billion. It's a very difficult figure to even get your head around. So how much, by the time it's proportionally set down to the 42 county councils that we have, that is a huge amount of money that could come into Suffolk.
Is it going to be equally spent, or are we going to be seen as the fat cats of the UK as usual?
That wasn't mentioned. One of the things that Mr. Osborne said is it builds on the programme of infrastructure investment and reform that's helped to increase total public and private UK infrastructure investment. So one assumes that there's 29 billion went between 2005 and 10 and 33 billion in the last 2 years. I think what the coalition government are sort of trying to point out there is that they in the last 2 years have done an awful lot more than what the previous government did in the last five. But in Suffolk, we didn't see that.
No, we didn't. And the devil's in the detail. And everybody knows that a lot of the business community, especially the FSB, is outcome-driven. And that's what we actually look for. We hear the statements, fine. But where's the mechanism? Where's the mechanism to drive it? If the document's there, the Concordat has been around for a long time, all they have to do is follow it. And all they have to do is work together.
I think that would be quite an interesting one, Peter, to see. I wouldn't like to be the auditor.
Well, if we think of the European Union, they've failed the audit for the last 7 years.
No, that's because they can't agree to sign it off.
Then when it comes to procurement, for example, I come from the Forest Heath side of the county, and there they were too concerned, in fact, about European rules rather than localism. And where a contract, a simple contract, can be split, it can be put into bite-sized pieces, therefore it can be tended for locally. But they're frightened to do it. When it comes to actually then liaising with the other councils, the county council, we still find that there's like a huge wall between them. They don't talk to each other in a lot of cases. It's slowly increasing now. But we've seen projects, for example, in Newmarket, where a piece of work was done by the council, and then the county council came along and dug it up and put something else there. I mean, that kind of thing is just ridiculous.
It's what drove everybody mad, especially with the roads. And that's why the bill was brought in, where there had to be a cohesion, there had to be communication between gas, electricity, telecom, sewers, water, etc. It's supposed to work.
And they haven't got an excuse. I'm sorry, this county hasn't got an excuse. In fact, this region hasn't got an excuse, because they were funded under the previous government through the Michael Bishard scheme initiative. And I think they called it something strange like management of place or total place, which was basically looking at what Service Canada had done by sorting out the spend. Now, they've had the training, they've done the work.
But it didn't go any further.
No, it didn't go any further. I mean, even with the council CEO, Andrea Hill, being in charge of the process, it never went anywhere.
What was interesting is when we spoke to Deborah Cadnam, she hadn't even heard of it.
And yet she was with EDA. I mean, for goodness sake.
She was the chair of EDA.
Yeah, well, there wasn't CEO. There's not a joined-up thinking on that. So I think that'd be quite an interesting item.
If Deborah Cadnam wants the documents, they're on the FSB website. Including the Marie Antoinette Fumien presentation that came from Canada.
So I think you'll find she had them sent to her as well.
Okay.
So we'll keep an eye on where the income comes from and where it goes and whether it comes locally. One of the next statements he made for growth was a 1% cut in the main rate of corporation tax between 2014 to 21%. That sounds great, Peter.
It would be if you were making £500,000 or £1 million profit a year. But for the most part, the majority of small businesses don't make that kind of profit. And because there's already a small business rate relief in, they're paying their 20%, will continue at 20%. What it does mean is that the larger companies are now going to have the tax rate coming down to meet theirs. So, well, that is good for large companies, and at least, of course, your Starbucks, when you don't pay tax anyway.
Well, they are. They're paying $10 million this year and $10 million next.
Well, thank goodness for a public conscience. But it's not going to make a big difference to the economy.
That sounded quite good to me. I thought, oh, that's a positive. Once again, it just proves that you have to have an expert to tell you sometimes exactly what it does mean. I was noting that they have a significant temporary increase in the annual investment allowance from $25,000 to $250,000 for 2 years. So any small business who have to do an investment, they're going to get 100% write-off and tax within the next 2 years. That is pretty good.
That's excellent.
That was a good one. That was a positive one. But I will say, from all the small businesses I'm talking to, there are not a huge amount who are actually going to be making any investment because they can't get the finance.
Absolutely correct. And that's why one of the other initiatives, which we'll probably come on to later on, about making finance more accessible, will be absolutely fundamental. But if we're going to actually succeed, we actually have to, where over the last 3 years people have not been investing in capital equipment because they're basically saving the pounds, they're going to have to invest. That investment will lead to more jobs, but it does require the economy to have the confidence to, for people to take the risk on spending it. If it means that you're going to get a 100% tax deduction, that's got to help.
Well, it is actually the next point, and this is one of the big things that you've spoken about, Chris, with Peter, and have tried to get movement both within Suffolk, East Anglia and nationally. George Osborne's point was to ensure businesses, particularly small businesses, can access finance and support. The government will create a business bank to deploy $1 billion of additional capital, enable UK Export Finance to provide up to an extra $1.5 billion in loans to finance small firms' exports, and introduce a package of reforms to promote exports and inward investment, including additional funding to the UK Trade and Investment Board to deliver more services to small and medium-sized exporters, and increase funding for the Great Campaign to showcase Britain's capabilities.
Well, all I'd say is that I'm a small businessman and I know my place. But having said that, what that sounds like is an introduction to something called old-fashioned banking. Now, that's fine, but let's look at the things we do know. The banks don't know how to do old-fashioned banking anymore because they broke up the infrastructure inside the banks that actually delivered old-fashioned banking. So they have to if they are going to change, they've got to completely reinstate that. The other thing we know is, even with the greatest will in the world, central government doesn't understand small businesses. It tries to understand small businesses, it listens to small businesses, but whether it's the civil servants who don't understand more small businesses, or they think, it's just too difficult. It's just too difficult. Mm-hmm. Let's talk to the CBI, that's easy.
Yeah.
Whatever the reason, they don't actually understand small business, and they don't actually understand how to deliver small business. Now, just imagine the mechanism that they've got to put in place, which is why I want them to get it right.
Mm.
In a way, they've got to put in a structure in the regions, locally, that can deliver without a huge amount of infrastructure cost, taking a top slice, how to deliver this money to small businesses to enable the widget makers to make more widgets, because they've got an order book to make widgets, but they need another widget making machine that costs $35,000, and they don't want to be mortgaged up to the hilt to do it.
Yep.
They want sensible, reasonable rate, long-term lending that they can actually begin to make good product to drive the economy forward. Now, we know that the sector that can actually produce this is the small and medium-sized business sector, because the CBI and the big businesses have failed. Otherwise, we'd be moving forward. They have to turn to us, but they find it difficult. So, they've laid out the amount of money initially that they're thinking about lending. It seems to me that they're nervous about it because they haven't put that much forward. So they're saying, well, we'll have a go, and if it works. Well, actually, have a go and make it work. But actually learn from the mistakes in the past. The mistakes in the past that when you're talking to small and medium-sized businesses and deal with them, a third of the money involved goes in people in the middle as a top slice. because they're consultants or they're people who do it. You've got to find an effective way of putting that money out that isn't going to top slice a vast amount, that is going to make sound, old-fashioned banking business decisions. Mm. And that's something that, to do that, they've really got to look at how the local economy works. So it's all very well Heseltine wagging his finger at them, saying they've got to learn. Well, yes, they have. But they've really got to work with the small and medium-sized business sector and come and have a look. It might be a very good idea if Treasury mandarins actually came out and worked with some small businesses for a couple of months. Wouldn't that be a shock to their system?
That might be just a step beyond on that one, I'm afraid, Chris. But one of the things, Peter, that you know, they say they're putting $1 billion out into this business bank. They've already put $4.2 billion out to the top seven, or top five, really, high street branches, as we know, because most small businesses go to the local branch. That's where they feel comfortable. That's where they've always dealt. But there's only $2 billion of it that's been lent.
And the reason for that is quite simply, the terms that apply to the replacement to the Small Firm Loan Guarantee Scheme were too harsh. The interest rates were too high. The requirement for additional guarantees became onerous.
Additional guarantees. The guarantee was 75% off the government. Why would they want additional?
Ah, because under the new scheme, they could ask for a guarantee on the other 25% as well, and a charge on your home. Whereas on the original Small Firms Loan Guarantee Scheme, once they had the 75% guarantee from the government, they could ask for no more.
Right, so that's a bit of a change.
So that's quite harsh. So you can imagine if you've been living in your house for the last 15 years, you've got a business opportunity, or you actually need money to expand or to survive in this recession, but you've got genuine orders coming forward, and you're being asked to give up the rights to your spouse's other half of the house, this is a very difficult decision.
It's a huge jump.
So therefore it became unattractive.
Right. So that's the reasons why there's still $2 billion floating around in the five big banks that hasn't been lended out.
Absolutely.
Lent out.
And that's why on this money, one of the emphasis is to actually lend it via other institutions as well. So there will be other vehicles to lend through rather than just the main high street bank.
I mean, ideally, they could set up exactly the same as Dave Bank.
They could, or they could use that thing, which I think we must still have an interest in, called the post office.
Yeah, brilliant.
Gosh, post bank. Mm-hmm. It's already got an infrastructure. It owns the gyro bank.
Yeah. Is gyro bank still going?
You'll still find a gyro at the bottom of your electricity bill.
Amazing. And that is accessible to everybody, no matter where they are, whether they're in the Highlands, whether in the coast, down in Cornwall, or whether they're on the East Coast.
Well, maybe. The issue is, you and I both know, and we've been around long, I've certainly been around long enough to remember old-fashioned banking.
Yeah. I was in old-fashioned banking.
And I had a relationship with my bank manager who knew me, knew my business, knew how I'd started up in a chapel, got my first order from Harrods and Heels, saw me produce that, go out and get more orders. He saw it, he progressed it, he supported me as I did it, and that disappeared. And it is about people. It doesn't matter that when I go into the bank now, I just see very nice people behind the counter, and they are nice. And I talk to them about what their daughter's doing now, or their son's doing now, and the latest thing that they... And it's fine. But it's not about business. And it's not about growing my business. And it's not about growing my members' businesses. It really isn't. Because at the end of the day, it's either going to be the computer says no, because there's a set of tick boxes, or it's going to be somebody with experience. The grey hairs that are, at the moment, dealing, either being made redundant, or they're actually still doing things further, higher up the food chain, coming down to the sharp end and supporting the younger members of staff and teaching them how to make good decisions about banking with the permissions that occasionally they're going to make a mistake. But most of the time, they're going to see this as a sound order. Mm. It's a well-developed business. They will have gone to look at the business and seen that it's work, and they're going to begin to learn about how businesses work. We've got to put that back, and it isn't there. So, yes, Gyro Bank is a possibility, but it's not as anonymous as the thing we're trying to put in. What we need is almost crisis management. And I don't think, at the moment, central government is prepared to take on crisis management. they have to, why is it taking them so long to get the banks to understand they have failed? They are still failing.
Well,
and they're failing this economy.
Whilst you've got this government and the previous government injecting money into the banks rather than letting the banks fail, as they did in Iceland, and I know an awful lot of people were hurt in Iceland, but Iceland is recovering very nicely. We have injected a huge amount of taxpayers' money, savings, and we have borrowed to do it. And the banks are still taking huge bonuses and not listening to the government. It's like having a spoiled brat.
When they bring have a conscience again, that's when we know they've succeeded, and that has not happened.
No. I think we better move on from that one, because it's getting a bit... Now, under fairness...
Fairness?
Mm.
My goodness.
He came up with a couple of things. Anybody who didn't hear, the increase in the personal allowance went up to £235, taking you to £9,440 before you pay tax. The government will provide further support to business and motorists by cancel the 3p litre fuel duty. That should have come on in January. Now, to me, that was one of the things that when I was interviewed by the BBC yesterday, before the announcement, I asked for, because in Suffolk, that is huge for us. Because of the rural location, I mean, we're a very wide county, and to get from one side to the other, that will save a fortune to businesses as well as to everybody else in the county.
The key part here is that not only have they removed it instead of postponing it, but it sets a trend for the future. The escalator that was put in before was all very well adding 3p every so many months as a green type policy, but if you do that forever, there comes a point when you actually block the whole system. You make it unaffordable for people to live in their normal lives, for businesses that are trucking to deliver the goods, and actually that harms their economy.
Mm.
And I'm really pleased to see they've cancelled it.
Yeah, I think that's a really positive.
It was a very inward-looking process in the first place. When they started it, they starting at a base pretty well the same as in Europe. But as they stepped it up and Europe didn't, they made our businesses less competitive.
Yeah.
And it was getting to the stage that it was getting critical. So I think it was the kind of thing that they had to do, and good for them, they had the courage to do it.
Yeah, I think that's it. That is a real good positive on that one. One of the other fairness, he said, that capital gains annual exempt amount will increase by 1% each year over the same period. What does that mean, Peter?
It means that if you make a capital gain, then you will benefit a little bit. It's as simple as that. It's not going to affect many people at all.
So this is the people who make the 300,000, 500,000?
Indeed.
Oh, right. Okay, so as a small business, there's not many of us will be in that state. So that, to me, was the key business bits that sort of came out of the statements. I have sat today and read through all the analysis, gone through what the other specialists have said. Basically, they have said that it hasn't really been a major change, apart from the fudging of the figures. There's a few things, but the people who seem to are going to be hit, again, is middle income, middle class, who at the present moment just managing to keep their heads above water. And they were the spenders. So for small businesses and retail, this could actually be a big hit to the budget. You know, they might have an extra bit in the pocket because of the fuel, but anybody who's on the benefit system, then that will make a major impact to them. And I just hope that that doesn't get knocked on to retail businesses in particular.
Sooner or later somebody's got to, but actually they don't have to. Sooner or later, I would like central government to bite the bullet on investing nationally. Now, we haven't been very good at it in the past, but the Germans have been very good at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the Germans have been very good at looking at their 15 state areas, working out what they need,
mm-hmm.
and putting so many, it was Deutschmarks and then Euros, into those areas to make them grow and enable them to grow. BMW only became the preeminent car manufacturer it is because it had long-term
investment
and support mm-hmm. that they could rely on
yeah.
until they became the powerhouse that they become. And it wasn't just big companies, it was smaller companies mm. could actually do it. Now, it comes back to this idea of the investment bank. And I think the very fact that they put it in shows that they know it's a good idea.
Mm.
They know that the model exists elsewhere, but we're not Germany. We haven't got German civil servants. We haven't got people in our treasury who understand the needs of the economy like German civil servants do. And that's a problem. We could bring them in. I mean, we brought in a Canadian senior banker. We could actually bring in German people into the treasury. My goodness, wouldn't that cause a problem?
Wouldn't it? Yes.
But yeah. it's the ideas. Mm. I mean, I'm being flippant. But
you're not in a way, because...
But it's the ideas. The ideas are incredibly important. It's a no-brainer. But the problem is that the stages that allow it to become successful, so that we do successful lending mm. that has meaning, that is reliable against sound projects, is quite difficult when there's an absence of that knowledge base,
mm-hmm.
both in central government and locally. And you can't even say that you can go to the banks and draw personnel out of the banks who know it. You might be able to. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe the people who are key, who have left banking, who came from that sector, who still remember old-fashioned banking, maybe they could be the people who could be brought into this bank to actually help direct it in a more, I was saying old-fashioned way, but it's actually more principled, traditional banking way that works.
Well, true ethical banking.
Yeah, true ethical banking. The model that actually grew out of Germany when it's on its knees, when they had to come to a pact with its people about what it was going to do, how it was going to tax them, but what it was going to deliver, and then keeping faith with them. Now, we need to put in a system where they make it very clear what they want to deliver, how they're going to deliver it, and they keep a faith with the business community so that we have confidence to actually go ahead and do something. And at the moment, there's just the little shoots mm. popping across out of the ground that's saying that they get the message. Now, those shoots have got to grow, and they've got to really demonstrate that yeah. they understand.
But they have to be nurtured. They have to, you know, they're saying they're putting a $5.5 billion capital package forward for certain infrastructures, and they announced 100,000 new social housing yesterday as well. I don't know where the funding of that's going to come, whether it comes out the 5.5. Because obviously when they make these statements, the full background to all the figures don't get put in public for quite a long time. They have said that they won't be announcing all the true figures until the end of January at the very earliest. And one of the things that I'm afraid I do bang on about this a bit, because one of the big things I think that we need in this country is to have construction going, whether it be roads, whether it be hospitals, schools. The key thing obviously is social housing, traditional social housing, not blocks that are thrown up which aren't particularly attractive, but decent sized houses with a decent garden. And also the fact that developers get access to funding, and then the purchasers, if it's not social housing, get access to mortgages. And I'm not talking about the way it used to be, or five times your annual salary. Go back to what it was. When I was a bank manager, if a couple came to me, they got 2.5% of their joint income, or at the very most, as a single person, you'll get three times your income. And then it went up, stupid figures, 5, 7.5. Well, that's not sustainable. You know, 10 times, yeah. Peter's putting his hands up to tell me. But it is, you know, that is not sustainable. So we have to go back, as you say, Chris, to the ethical side, so that we get sensible lending that we can develop. And it will be slow time development, this.
Whenever any government is in opposition, they always talk about how important localism is.
Mm.
They don't give it that necessarily, that title, but they talk about it and they give it different catchphrases. As soon as they get into power, it scares them to death. Because basically you have to hand over shed loads of money to get used properly and effectively. Well, I think this government is nervous. Heseltine says they shouldn't be nervous. he's made enough speeches about it, telling them that in fact they need to start having some courage. But then I would have to say, as somebody who works in the local area, is I would like him to tell me and identify where he is going to put that money to have that money spent effectively, carefully, with best return on capital employed.
Mm.
Because the things that scares governments in the past are still there to scare governments now. We've replaced the development agencies with the LEPs, which are under-resourced, supposedly business-led.
Mm.
Whether they're actually delivering, they tend, I think, to deliver well when they concentrate on one or two things. But actually, what we're actually asking here is for the whoever delivers this to think about more than one or two things at the same time. Mm. And to deliver on a multifaceted
view. Yeah. They can't.
And they've got to be able to deal with many, many subjects and make them pay. Because, and this is the key thing, there is a finite, defined amount of money. It isn't infinite. And it's contracting, so every pound spent has to return 2 or 3 or 4 pounds.
Yeah.
We haven't any longer got the luxury of giving money and not getting a return on capital. Certainly not investment. And that's, I think, what used to happen when money used to come from central government to the regions. If it didn't actually work, it didn't really matter. Now, we haven't got that luxury. And that's what concerns me. And that's why they've got to really do a full analysis of how local government is working and how localism is working. Not that I object to it. I want it to work. I'm passionate that it should work. I want our councils to be really, really efficient. I want them to service business. I want them to recognise the business community as a customer. They just don't.
Mm. Well, I think we need to do a summary of what we feel the announcements have been. So we're definitely very, very happy with the 3p increase in fuel, increase in January being totally taken out of the equation,
which is brilliant.
Yeah, the 25,000 up to 250,000 for the annual investment allowance,
that's going to be really important if we do get growth.
Well, that's right. And I do think they have put a billion forward of additional capital, and they're going to put 1.5 billion in loans and finance, and that's going to be funded under the GREAT, G-R-E-A-T campaign.
But it's still going to come back to return on capital, and it's still going to talk about how are they going to successfully talk to, negotiate and deal with and deliver to small businesses.
Yeah.
Actually, it's quite difficult.
Yeah. Well, I think generally for small businesses,
It's a good budget.
Right.
It's stable. It doesn't do anything too radical. You know what's happening tomorrow. Your staff are going to get a little bit more on their pay packet because of the rise in the personal allowance. If you invest in your business and take that gamble, and let's face it, any expansion's a gamble, but that's what we are. We're a country of entrepreneurs, and hopefully this will help stimulate the growth.
For me, it's one of great potential. No more. It's actually doing some things that are just really good, like, you know, we've talked about those. But the thing that interests me is the potential there. It could be the start of something really good, and that's what I hope it delivers. I hope it's just the start of something truly fantastic.
Well, one thing I can definitely guarantee the government, if they ever do listen to this, is the FSB will be watching and they will comment. Well, guys, thank you very much for coming in. And I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you.
Take care. God bless.
Thank you.
The news. Google's free cloud service has gone. The service, which included Gmail, Google+, Google Drive, Calendar, video chat and document editing and storage, now costs £3.30 a month. However, a free trial is still available to see if it suits your needs. More rules from the EU. From the 21st of December 2012, insurance companies will no longer be able to take into account whether you are male or female. This will not only increase the amount of insurance premiums paid by women for their car insurance, since historically they have been considered safer drivers, but also depress the rates received by men on their annuities from their pensions, since men tend not to live as long as women. Technology-inspired innovation. The Technology Strategy Board is to invest up to $10 million in fast-track and collaborative research and development projects that stimulate innovation in materials, bioscience, electronics, sensors, photonics, and information and communication technologies. Projects must be collaborative and business-led. The competition was opened on the 3rd of December 2012, and information and links are provided on our ChatBiz website, chatbiz.org.